Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Overthrows podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at DefMango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. Apologies for sounding the way I do. I've been on plenty of meds, antibiotics, Panadol, roids, just to get through the wedding. But I'm back.
But you've been married. You're married.
Yes.
Correct?
It's officially. Done. First ever Good Areas awesome. Live after getting married.
Yeah. Congratulations, man. Well done. I told you it's a full-on endeavor.
Yeah. No, it was. We still have one more event to go, the New Year's party. So hopefully I'll be alive next time we meet. Anyway, we've got a few people in the comment section already. There's Rat, Dr. Daywalker, AJ, and Mookie, who is saying get well soon, Behram. So thank you for that. And we're going to start off by talking about the Boxing Day test match at the MCG, of course. That's what this podcast is about. And Australia smashed India by 184 runs. It was a tantalizing test match, ebbs and flows, and India fought back at times, and Australia sometimes also lost the plot, but eventually came good. And what this has done, Jared, now, in terms of scenarios, is that India need to win at the SCG in order to keep their hopes alive to qualify for the final. They will require Sri Lanka to defeat Australia by 1-0 or 2-0 in that series. Then it's looking a bit bleak, isn't it?
It's looking a bit unlikely, I suppose, is the best way of putting it at the moment, isn't it? They've been really behind the eight ball in the last two games. They've kind of occasionally stepped up to be, you know, in decent positions at times, but certainly behind the eight ball throughout both of those games. And if you look at the game before that, Australia won that one as well. So I know the SCG might suit them a little bit more. It's a slightly different kind of surface, you know, all those sorts of things. I don't disagree with any of that. But as you look at it at the moment, you would say that it would surprise me, I think, if India came back and blitzed. But I also don't think there's that much between these teams. Do you know what I mean? There has been plenty of times when I've thought to myself, this team can easily win some of these games, like the Gabba test when Australia fell apart, you know, when the Australian top order here fell apart again. Yeah. Like, even when they've been behind India, they've still been within touching distance.
Absolutely. I mean, there was a point in that third innings, you know, when Australia were what, 6 for 94 or something like that? 94
six for 91,
six? Yeah, something like that. So at that point, I was like, okay, India have time. If they can wrap things up quickly, then maybe they can chase down 240 odd, right? So they had their moments, and both of these teams have holes, especially when the batting comes. But there is one guy, though, who has been absolutely phenomenal throughout. Jasprit Bumrah
has... He's holeless.
Yeah, he's absolutely holeless. No holes over there. 4 for 99 in 28.4 overs in the first innings, and then 5 for 57 in 24.4 overs the next time he came out to bowl. He's got 30 wickets in 4 test matches, so I'm looking good. You know, I said 30 to 35 in 5.
Yeah.
So we're there. Yeah.
The only thing I would say is that at the moment, it looks like you could be right and he could still, they could still lose.
Yeah, yeah,
which
absolutely.
Which is remarkable, isn't it? I mean, that's the random thing about what's happening at the moment is, you know, they have gone, it's so dramatic the way these things are going that, you know, he's going to have the series of a lifetime and they're still potentially not going to come over, which is, who would have put money, like, if you have told me, I think when you said it, I was like, they should be really in the contest with that amount of wickets. And, you know, they're not.
Yeah, it is really fascinating, right? Because he's obviously going to take a few wickets in the last test match as well, provided he plays, because they have run him to the ground. And I would be afraid for his fitness as well. But knowing Bumrah, he's going to step out there, knowing that India have somewhat of a chance, right? If they win at the SCG, it's not entirely unbelievable that Australia lose in Sri Lanka. It could still happen. So India would still want to believe that this is possible. But just on the man, despite the workload and everything, we all know he's bowled a lot. We know he's taken 30 wickets in 4 test matches. But his overall record now stands at 203 wickets in 44 test matches at 19.42 apiece. Yeah. He's gotten to 200 plus wickets at a below or an average of below 20. So he's greater than Barnes now. I suppose we can make that claim, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, has anyone else ever done this? Because Sean Pollock and Waqar Yunus also had, 190-odd wickets at a very low average, but I'm not sure if they crossed 200 at below 20.
I think, and I could be wrong, but I think at some stage in his career, either Imran Khan or Malcolm Marshall took 200 wickets at under 20, but not from start to finish.
Right.
Right? So he's certainly the first person to do that. I mean, he's significantly gone past Barnes now. I mean, I haven't looked at, you know, match reach... match ratios and everything. Mm-hmm. There are some other bowlers with better match ratios than Bumrah, of course. I think McGrath is the one that is the standout when you look at that particular metric. But yeah, I think that was the number that we really wanted him to get to as cricket fans, right? Mm-hmm. Like we just wanted him to get to that number. So we all felt a little more comfortable to be like, okay, now we can legitimately start to talk about him as a future great and not just what we were talking about before, which was an incredible player who we hoped would one day, get to that section. We can now start to really dissect his career. And hopefully for us, he takes another 120 test wickets, which might take another 8 games at this rate.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so there's more to go through. Like I was looking today, I know it's weird, but Javagal Srinath only ever took 3 wickets. Only ever played 3 games in England, right? And I've watched Javagal Srinath. I think that he would have been a fine bowler in England and was probably made for those conditions. But in 3 tests, he probably didn't get much of a chance, right? And so that's one of the things with Bumrah at the moment. It'd just be great for him to just continue to play everywhere. So he just builds that case. And then also we are in a bit of a counting stats era, right? Rabat is going to take a lot of wickets. Cummins is going to take a lot of wickets. Hazelwood, Jimmy Anderson and Broad just took a kabillion wickets. Southee just took a lot of wickets. Eventually, we don't want it to be a kind of Shane Bond-like thing, do we? Mm.
Yeah.
We want it to be beyond Shane Bond, where it's like, no. He played more than enough for us to say he was an absolute great. We don't have to just pull it a couple of threads.
I would say we're already there. I mean, he's 31 years of age. He's got 200 plus test wickets at a bowling average of below 20. And plus, there's one thing where you look at the numbers.
When you say already there, would you say he's already the best seam bowler of all time?
No, I can't say that, right?
That's what I mean.
We're not quite there yet.
If he had another 4 years of this and he takes another 120, 160 wickets, which is a lot, that may not happen in 4 years. But if he does that, then it's very hard to not have him in the top, in that Malcolm Marshall, Glenn McGrath, whoever else you want to have at that top of that list, Imran Khan, Richard Hadlee type list. He's not, as you said, he's just not quite at that level at the moment. Yeah. And that's where but we've got him to the bit where if he retires tomorrow and he can never bowl another ball in Test cricket, he's still an all-time great seam bowler. No one is going to take that away. But I'm greedy now, right?
I mean,
it's a bit like Steve Smith. I was really annoyed when Steve Smith lost his form because I just wanted Steve Smith to go on and average 65. I wanted to be there. Oh my God. Imran Khan had a 200 wicket streak where he averaged 16.7. I pulled that off the top of my head,
That's crazy.
It took Varun about 5 minutes to find it. But yeah, that is what we're talking about here, right? We are talking about that sort of that next level.
And I mean,
a player
witnessing him bowl is almost like a visceral experience. He's so feral at times, but the nicest guy, even his sledges are nice. Where I remember at one point he was telling Cummins that he's the luckiest batter ever or something along those lines, which is like the kindest sledge you'll ever see. And then some of those deliveries, the one to Constance, right? Like that was insane in the second innings. And the one which got rid of, who was it? Alex Carey. Oh my God. No one can play that ball, man. No one. First it went out, then it came back in. It was insane. And the only unfortunate thing over here is that he's ended up with 30 wickets in 4 test matches. But he hasn't had enough support, even in this test match. Sure, Jadeja took 3 wickets in the first innings and Siraj took 3 in the third. But then again, it was, a different test match when Bumrah was bowling and when the others were bowling. And I think that's been kind of the main headline for India's bowling in the series.
Yeah, I don't think Siraj has been bad as a second option. He's been in rhythm at times. Actually, I think Akash has bowled okay, but Akash not getting any wickets and them not getting any wickets out of the fourth bowler.
Yeah.
It's just been a death knell, hasn't it? There's no coming back from that. I think if you look at Australia, Boland, Cummins, Stark, Hazelwood, whichever, those three have all produced wickets all the way, different times in this series. And you've got Bumrah with a little bit of Siraj and Akash and Harshit just not being able to step up. Mm. And then the fourth bowler essentially being a batter most of the time, right? Whether it be Nitesh, whether it be Jadeja, whether it be Washington, whether it be a combination of all three of them, right? It just hasn't stepped up. And so we're seeing one of the all-time great bowling spells in the history of, we're seeing, that sort of Mitchell Johnson, Imran in 82 level performance. And it's just not being backed up by the guys at the other end, is it? Yeah. And I'm not having a go at them either. I think Akash has bowled really well. And I don't think Siraj has been terrible, but they just haven't got the wickets. And then the fourth bowler has been a bit of a black hole.
Yeah, that's been the issue, really. But it was interesting to see how they dropped Shubman Gill in this test match, right? I did not see that one coming. And sure, they went with all three of Jadeja, Reddy and Washington. And, you know, to the selectors or Gautam Gambhir's or whoever made that call, to their credit, Reddy scored 114, Sundar pitched in with 50. But both of those guys weren't particularly penetrative with the ball. So I'm not sure, like, you know, was it worth it in the end? Because they did get runs. So it's a tricky one. And was Gill the guy they should have dropped? That's another big question, isn't it?
Well, he wasn't, right? I mean, that's part of the issue, is that it probably had to be one of the less informed players than him.
Yeah.
I do think there's an element of them doing it because there was right-handers and they wanted an extra left-hander in, because Hazelwood is the only one who's been taking wickets against left-handers for the Australians. Even Lyon hasn't been taking them at a massive rate. So I wonder if that was an element as well. But what they did was they left themselves with one part-time seamer and two spinners who they were never, you know, they were only ever going to really need one of them.
Also, and sorry, I'm cutting you off over here, but if they really wanted to go down that route, should have stopped Ashwin for another test match and maybe played him ahead of Washington. I mean, I'm not throwing shade at Washington. I thought he batted well and he was all right with the ball, but you could have been more incisive with Ashwin there. I don't know.
I mean, you might be right, but I'm not sure that would have helped them all that much either. Do you know what I mean? Like, when it comes down to it, I'm just not sure that that would have helped them either. And so with that in mind, I'm like, I think they just made a mistake. They probably got a little bit funky, but they're getting funky because they're not getting any runs out of two guys.
Yeah.
And I'm just seeing, as Rohit said he's retiring.
Has
or
he?
Is, well, I'm just, there's an article up on Times of India that I've just seen now that says he's retiring at the end of the Sydney test.
Okay.
So I don't know. We'll have to ask the group. Actually, Varun can go off and find that out for us.
Also,
at
I mean,
the moment.
But he might not play the Sydney test at this rate. He's averaging, what, six
well, I think
in this
that's
series?
The other, that's the other conversation, isn't it? And, you know, I got no problem with a player in bad form calling time, and we've seen that before. But that part of the problem that India have had for a while, but more specifically right at the moment that it's two of them, is that Virat and Rohit have lost form at the same time. And it was Rahane and Virat before, right? And, and Pujara a little bit as well. Like, they've had four senior batters over a long period of time.
So we've got the super chat, actually, which is on the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Jags21 has asked, should Rohit, Virat sit out, put the team before self? I mean, I don't think both of those guys would sit out. But and then Kunal Rana has asked, should Kohli retire? Look, Rohit is in a terrible run of form. I think far worse than Kohli. So let's establish that first. And secondly, it's just one test match now. I feel like at best you drop one of those guys and maybe play Shubman Gill. But it's a tough one because they've had such, you know, illustrious careers and they've been such behemoths of the game. So it's not an easy call.
And that is why Australia decided to drop Shane Keith-Warne. Cricket is a game of strategy, of picking the right players for the right moment, or playing the right shots at the right ball. And Hit Wicket captures that perfectly. In Hit Wicket, you're not just picking a team, you're collecting cricket legends, expanding your squad with each new addition. The more players you have, the more options you have to dominate in any situation. And then comes the real challenge, picking your playing 11. Who are your opener, run machine, and Mr. 360? Do you stack your top order with aggressive batters, or do you build a solid foundation? And what about your bowling attack? Do you go with pace, spin, a mixture of both? We've got the Tasmanian Devil, Jimmy, and Boom. The possibility are endless. The beauty of Hit Wicket is that you need to adapt your lineup to your opponent. They can be powerful, balanced, and technical. Each class has an edge over another. It's a tactical dance where you need to anticipate your opponent's moves and exploit their weaknesses. So if you think you've got the strategic mind to build a championship team, download Hit Wicket and prove it. I'm not like romantic with this sort of stuff. Sometimes you get to choose exactly when you retire. Sometimes you get knocked out, right? So I'm always of the position of you should make the best decision for your team. And the best decision for the team at the moment is for them not to do that, right?
Yeah.
Not to play those two guys and to move on. Not to, you know, if Virat wants to play on, that's fine. But in the next test, I'm not sure really what the, you know, if they're trying to win the next test, you would have to say at the moment that Virat and Rohit are probably not going to help them. Although, I thought both of them moved fine again in this innings, but Virat still played his shot and Rohit probably got a very good ball that he played, a bit of an aggressive shot too. But yeah, I'm usually of the thing of you just you move on and you look towards the future and go with that. But you have to have conversations with players at this level, right?
Yeah.
Like I think you owe that. You'll be shocked. Like there are some players who are just like, I don't want the pity party game at the end.
Right? I mean, look at Ashwin.
Lots of players have done that. Yeah, I mean, he could have probably stuck around if he wanted for that sort of stuff. And I know plenty of players that have said to me, no, when it's done, it's done. And other players will say, when they've decided to not pick me, it's done. And this is good, great players as well. I'm not just talking about average players here. And then you get players who are like, no, I put in all this effort. I'd like to say goodbye properly on the field for one last time. You know, you've got to have mature conversations with your stars about this sort of stuff. How you treat your stars really shows how you are as a professional unit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're too sycophantic, that's an issue. If you're not at all understanding the emotional side of things, you know, that is another part of all this. So it'd be very, very interesting with what is going on with Rohit and Virat. And thanks for the super chats as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, you could easily make a choice to move on. I mean, Gautam Gambhir, he had a very cushy looking job a couple of months ago. And suddenly he's like, how did I end up here?
Yeah. He's also someone who was kind of forced out of the team, wasn't he, back in his day? So, I mean, now he's tasked with this situation where no one really knows what to do with Rohit and Kohli here on. But yeah, I mean, we are towards the end. We know that much. That much is confirmed. Yeah. How they go about things, you know, in the immediate aftermath of this loss, like whether they play those guys in Sydney or not, that's a question they'll have to answer. But come next World Test Championship cycle, I don't see them being mainstays, right? India will have to look towards the future. But where two careers are almost towards their end, one career is on the rise, and that is of Nitish Kumar Reddy. I'm a fan, you know, he plays beautifully in the V, particularly in that extra cover region and down the ground. Some delightful shots over there. And I mean, that was a really like nice touch with the 100 as well, where he, you know, paid tribute to his dad who was in the stands, who apparently quit his job to, you know, fund. I don't know how that works. How do you quit your job to fund someone's cricket career? Someone will have to explain that one to me. But you know, he was in tears, and Nitish Kumar Reddy has been a breakout star for India with the bat in this series. So, you know, there's that positive.
Yeah, Jaiswal just played two really, really important innings for them. Washington played a very important innings for them, and bowled well at times over the last little while. There's just plenty of reasons to be optimistic. There's some issues. I don't know how they have a captain unless they give it to Bumrah, which is big.
Again, yeah.
You know, there's that. Yeah, so that's an interesting one that they have to make a call on. They've got some good batting talent, but I don't know if they have anyone instantly who's going to come in at number four and start making runs. Having said that, they haven't got any runs out of the number four position for quite some time. So they might be just like, well, it's not that big of a difference for us.
How much has Kohli averaged in the last 3 years? Like 27, 30?
Yeah, I don't know. It's the last four or five years now, isn't it? He had one good year.
Yeah.
He had the one good year, didn't he? 2023. And then everything else has been pretty poor. But there's obviously talent coming through. Like, you know, Mayank Yadav. And just having the three spinners that they have, Mayank Yadav, Jasprit Bumrah, Mohammad Shami, hopefully is not finished yet. You might get some more years out of him. Jadeja might stick around for a little while. Like, there's some players there. And they haven't played particularly well. And there was a moment when they were favourites to win this game ahead of Australia on day five.
Yes, right? Absolutely.
They were favourites on day four ahead of Australia. I know. I think the draw was favourite on day five outright. But if you're just looking between the two teams, India were favoured ahead of Australia briefly. And on day four, I think India winning was the most likely result at one stage.
Yeah. So Virat is averaging
35.
Yeah, 35 since 2022, which is not so stellar.
Yeah, so I think you could argue that you could find a replacement for that, and you get a process player and you say, well, hopefully if we give them 2 years of averaging around 30 to 35, then they can spring on the way they've gone. KL Rahul's form, he looks like a completely different player, although hilarious that he finally makes runs opening and he bats at first drop.
He got a peach from Cummins, right? And that's a signature Pat Cummins dismissal. Top of off. No one can play that.
Yeah, I don't think the wicket specifically is anything I'd be too worried about. But in general, like, he's looked a lot more confident away from home recently. You know, he's played some really important innings in South Africa and Australia.
Yes.
That he could be a very important, you know, what I sort of call a bridge player. So it's not like it's the end of the world or anything, but I think we're always going to look, if they don't make the World Test Championship final, which looks very unlikely now, I think we're always going to look back and go, this was a pretty good test team. And they, you know, like, I mean, and by pretty good, I mean, you know, perhaps top five, top seven test teams in history over a long period.
Yes.
And they didn't get to, they didn't probably dominate as much as they should have. And of course, they played two World Test Championship finals in conditions that helped the opposition a little bit more.
Yes.
But to be fair, they'd beaten Australia in Australia and they played really good cricket in England. And they were, you know, they ran into a pretty special New Zealand side that was just about to crumble, right? Like, some things went against them, it's fair to say. But yeah, this feels like the end of that era, whatever that era was, you know, and what Ash would say, one of the last of the OGs, you know, I said at the start of this series, I can't remember if it was with you, but I think it was, that I expected a lot of retirements in this series.
You did say that.
We've got two. I don't think Usman Khawaja will retire now because I think he'll play onto the World Test Championship final. We might get three if Virat goes, you know, and so... You know, and who knows how much longer Jadeja will want to continue to play Test cricket.
Wait, so
as well.
is it official?
Don't expect him to go.
Is Rohit?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I have no idea
if it's official.
We don't know that yet. But anyway,
it doesn't look official on this One Times of India article. It looks like someone has like, because it's one of those articles where they say he's retiring, but it's not even like the major part of the article. So yeah, not 100% sure there. But the point being is, we were expecting some of this to happen, and this is a tough tour. They've got themselves into a great position at Perth. They got pink-balled in Adelaide. At the Gabba, they got behind in a rain-affected game and then still snuck back. In Melbourne, they got behind and were sneaking back again. There's some really good fight in this side. But both of these sides are flawed. And the Australia, generally, when both sides are flawed to the level that we see here, home sides usually find a way. And the other thing I said two things in this series. I said that I expected retirements. And the other one I said was, I expect at one stage for it to look like India could win this series.
I mean, they could have, right? There were moments.
But they did. After Perth, there's no way we could think that they wouldn't. And even at times yesterday and today, that felt like it was a possibility again. So I think they've kind of played up to where they are, that, you know, that it's hard for them to put together consistent performances when they don't make any runs.
That's fair. Also, Aditya Agarwal is saying that Rohit hasn't officially announced anything regarding his retirement. So, I mean, Times of India.
No one needs to tell the Times of India.
Yeah.
Literally, this is the title of this article. It says, while Rohit Sharma has decided to retire after the Sydney test, shouldn't he be saying goodbye right away? Wow. That's the title of it. That's the Times classic. Of India right now.
Check your sources, Times of India. Anyway, maybe they know something that we don't. We'll find out soon.
Honestly, you read the article. It looks like a sub editor has put that up as the title, and it isn't. And it isn't. It isn't backed up by the article at the moment.
Either someone is losing their job or getting a very hefty bonus. So we'll find out soon enough. Anyway, just a bit more on India. Of course, you touched briefly on Jaiswal. He's been their best batter in the series and in this Test match as well. 82 in the first innings, and then 84 in the second. And I mean, his dismissals in both innings were kind of controversial. First, people were losing their marbles that it's Jaiswal's fault. No, it's Kohli's fault. And, you know, I know you had some thoughts on that. And then, I don't know, for me, that second dismissal was out. I think that's a good use of technology when you see the trajectory of the ball change with the graphic. Yeah. So that's out to me. I don't know.
No, I think he definitely hit it. I think the issue is, and I don't think this is fair, it was a ball where the umpire had given it not out. And then Snicko backed that decision up. And the umpire took the third bit of information that wasn't involved with either of those first two and decided to overrule it. I think probably about 60 to 70% of the time an umpire would give that out. It was such a big deflection and it couldn't have been anything other than bat or glove, right?
Also, Sunil Gavaskar was upset with technology, but technology clearly showed the deflection, that green line thing that went, right?
But that was after the dismissal. That was after.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say is that was the other thing. And, you know, I've been on this for ages of like, there's more information that we could show here. You could see the ball deflecting, but sometimes that's a bit of an optical illusion, right? Like sometimes we think we can see the ball deflecting and it's not, or it's hard to tell. So fair play to the umpire for making that decision. I think heaps of umpires would have given that not out and he absolutely smashed it, right? Like, that's the truth. I've got no problem with Indian fans though sitting there going, well, wait a minute. Like, if one bit of the technology said this and one bit said, and then the camera said that, where should we go? But probably the right decision was made, I think, all things considered on that. But so I had money on Australia to win. And so when that happened, I was like, well, he smashed that. But I also suddenly thought to myself, do you know what? I reckon, like, I almost had to temper my own expectations. I was like, I think I've seen enough cricket over the last couple of years to know that a decent amount of umpires will just give that not out based on Snicko alone.
Yeah.
Whether that's right or wrong is that's then you have to make that decision yourself, right? Like, you know, you have to do that. I have no issue with this. But again, it shows that there's problems with the actual DRS system, right? Could he have asked for the Hawkeye? Is that even something he can ask for in that situation? Because if that's the case, a lot of times we see that, don't we? We see the ball going straight, it goes past the bat, and then it deviates on Hawkeye. Hmm. Is that not something we can also use in situations when Snicko isn't clear? If we're not going to pay for Hotspot, why not use the technology we're already paying for?
Exactly, because Hotspot would kill the conversation, but if we don't have that, then I feel like the trajectory is good enough. And there was a major deflection. We all saw it, right? But anyway, it was good...
The Akash Deep one as well, just on the Akash Deep one later. Again, I just thought the third umpire wasn't showing the proper angles to be able to show that.
And we've seen this a few times.
Both those situations. Yeah, yes. Both of those times we saw the decision given, and then afterwards we saw more information. I'm like, well, where are we? People are going to slag off the umpires. The umpire doesn't even know what is available to them. And as I've said, if you're not a specialist third umpire, it's really hard. So I just think for me, for a long time, that's been quite awkward, and it continues.
Yeah. I think we've been having this conversation for like 2 years now. So it hasn't changed. Nothing has changed. And while Jaiswal had a great game with the bat, he did drop 3 catches. None of them were hard. All of them should have been taken. So,
See, I disagree here.
Really?
I think the one at leg gully was very hard.
Hmm.
If he was too close, if the idea was for him to get the ball off the middle of the bat, the Khawaja one.
Huh.
He's just, have a look how close he's standing. Because my first thought was when they put him there, I was like, what's he there for? Like, is that inside edge onto the pad, or is it like glove and popping up? Like, it didn't make any sense to me. And I think he was there for that shot.
Hmm.
And if that's the case, it either hits the middle of your hands and it goes in, or it doesn't.
Hmm.
And then I think the other issue was that at second slip, second and third slip, I should say, the fielders got very, very close again.
Hmm.
But he dropped 3 catches.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think India dropped
having a terrible time of it.
4-5 in that inning. So they could have capitalized, and Australia were 94 or 91 for 6. There was also that no ball wicket, but that was late in the game. That didn't really matter.
That was also a drop, but he caught it in his legs.
I mean, that was a drop catch by his hands, not by his shins, right? But I mean, I know like there was lots of drama in this test match, but did you feel like everyone kind of lost their shit, like collectively in this one? First, the Kohli-Konstas thing, right? With the elbow shrug and everything, which everyone kind of called out, and he even copped a fine. Siraj was having his moments like he has been having them throughout the series, and him and Smith had a bit of an altercation. Sunny Gavaskar absolutely lost his marbles on commentary, right? Like, so this is my problem with that. When Rishabh Pant plays those shots and wins you a deciding test match at the Gabba, he's bold and he is playing fearless cricket, and that's his natural game. But when it doesn't work out, he doesn't deserve to go back to his own dressing room. Like, what the fuck is that all about, right?
Yeah, it's, I've already been fighting that argument quite a bit. I mean, there are some elements that I thought Rishabh got wrong, right? And one was that they put a fielder back there specifically for the 2 shots. One was the slog across the line, then he gets a top edge 4, and the other one is the ramp, right? And he knew that was there. And the other thing I would say is, I think you should attack Scott Boland. I don't think you should attack Scott Boland when he's at the end of his spell and you've batted really well against him, right? If it's at the start of the spell and you want to disrupt him, I think that's good. At that stage, let's say he hit a boundary off Scott Boland. They're just going to take Scott Boland off anyway. He bowled 4 or 5 overs at that point. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
To me, it's a weird mindset. And you go to his dismissal in the second innings, right?
Mm.
It's a half tracker. It's Rishabh Pant. He's going to hit it hard. Why not hit it on the ground, right?
Yeah.
Like, why not just absolutely hit it as hard as you can along the ground? And so, again, I look at that and I think to myself, I get Sunil Gavaskar. But, like, you go back to the Konstas stuff, right? Like, there was plenty of risk in that. And everyone was telling us what a bright young thing he was and how great it was and everything, right? And he missed his first 2.
Yeah.
Could have hit either of them straight up at the end or nicked them through to the keeper of the slips at that point. So this is my big issue with Test cricket is how, and T20 cricket as well, but mostly Test cricket more than the white ball forms, is if it works, we say it's genius and bold. And if it doesn't work, we say it's the worst thing we've ever seen.
Exactly.
And it's like, no, it can be a poor decision that works, and it can be a good decision that doesn't work.
That's Test cricket.
It's just about how you... Yeah.
Test cricket in 2024. Yeah, no, exactly. That's basically the name of the game. And I mean, look, Konstas played some weird scoops and ramps versus Bumrah and actually took Bumrah apart, right? Even down the ground, right? Through the covers and down the ground. And two of Bumrah's three most expensive overs in Test cricket came in this game when he was bowling to Konstas. So, I mean, yeah. This sort of stuff goes both ways. And Rishabh Pant has won games for India doing exactly this. So that's where I have an issue. And why are you, you know, questioning his commitment to the team all of a sudden? I think that's a bit, I don't know, it's uncalled for. And I mean, Rohit also lost his cool in the middle. He was screaming at Jaiswal. I don't know what the hell Travis Head was doing. I mean, my nephew was confused and I didn't know what to tell him.
He was talking about, I know, it looked like he was doing a fingering gesture. Yeah. We're all aware of that. He was talking about putting his finger back on ice.
Ah.
So he took a bunch of wickets in another game. Oh my God, I've forgotten where it was now. Was it Bangladesh or Pakistan? Bangladesh. Did he take a haul, maybe three or four wickets in one of those series? And he said that afterwards they didn't ask him to bowl that much. And he made a joke at the time about putting his finger back on ice, if I remember correctly. And I only heard half of what he was talking to Isha Guha, but I think that he might have mentioned it again in one of his on-field interviews. But yes, that's what I believed he was doing there.
So it is Sri Lanka.
It was a hell of a weird gesture, right?
Yeah, I mean, no one understood it. And some people really got pissed. They're like, kids watch the sport and this and that. And I mean, I was like, yeah, maybe he could have gestured something different to say that his finger's on ice or something. So, four-foot goal. Varun is confirmed.
Four-foot goal, it was Sri Lanka, wasn't it? Yeah.
Prince Bathra has a very weird comment over here, which I just want to bring up. He says, Behram Sam's first innings was a fluke. In Ashes, he'll have a flop show for sure. Kid thinks he has 20,000 runs in cricket. Do you watch modern day cricket, Prince? Because, you know, this is where we're at. People will try unorthodox stuff. And, you know, no one can play Jasprit Bumrah with a straight bat as is. You've seen people fail. You've seen Sam Konstas fail in the second innings. He worked it out. He tried something and it came off. And there's no way to confirm or kind of say that this will work again. But he scored 60 off 65 on test match debut as an 18-year-old versus the best bowler of his generation. Okay? That's the headline over here. So you can't just be shitting on the kid over here saying that, oh, it was a fluke.
As a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year. And I loved every part of it, except for one. This little evil pin here, because I needed this to change my SIM card. And when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies, but even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, or one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Sally app and use the code GOODAREAS, or one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Sally.
It wasn't a fluke, and I'll tell you why it wasn't a fluke. Like, as in, I mean, he might not have been able to replicate that again, but no one else has been able to do that at Bumrah anyway.
Exactly. Right?
But why it wasn't a fluke is because he had clear plans to each different kind of bowler. So against Siraj, he wasn't scooping. Against Siraj, he was coming down the wicket. He had thought specifically about a clear plan. And so I've got a bit of an issue with people saying things like it's a fluke. It's a lot more than that. And if you're just doing that, you don't understand what he was doing. And specifically, he got away with it, and he certainly confused India. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with anything from that point of view, but it's very different than than someone who comes out and just slogs wildly. There was thought process behind this, and he executed it. Now, we had a super chat about the
Warren, if you bring that up
from Vikas.
Vikas Niranjan asks, who makes the decision whether Hotspot, Ultra Edge or Snickle gets used in a match? Cricket Australia, BCCI, the MCG or the broadcaster? I would like to think the broadcaster.
No. So originally it was a broadcaster, and that caused all sorts of problems because we had test matches being played with very varying levels of equipment. Remember there was Hawkeye, and then there was also Eagle Eye that was being used, and they were both calibrated slightly different, is my memory. You had Snicko in some places, you had Ultra Edge in other places, you had Hotspot in other places. So again, you had three different systems, and then not all the broadcasters would pay for all that stuff. And so the ICC came in and they made a decision of what would be used. And I think there's an industry standard. I'm not an expert on exactly how it's done at the moment, but Vikas, I do remember that being a thing that came in. The reason we don't use Ultra Edge or Hotspot is because they are really, really expensive. They are far more expensive than the others for what they give you. And the other thing with Hotspot, and which one's Ultra Edge? That is Ultra Edge the sound one as well? It's so long ago, I can't even remember.
I can't remember, no. We've had Snickle for a while now.
Yeah, so Hotspot, the issue with Hotspot is that you could put tape on your bat, and there were some players would put like Vaseline on the edge of their bats and all sorts of things. And there was a thought that the ball wouldn't always make a hot mark. And so realistically, the best system is a combination between the noise and the Hotspot, right? And then, as I said before, also then using the deviation of the Hawkeye and saying, well, that ball has clearly deviated. And then using better angles and everything else. But unfortunately, we're still a little bit in a bit of a dark age. And a lot of this is because the ICC doesn't actually make it doesn't make money off Test cricket, right?
Yeah.
And so they have to keep it quite cheap for everyone else to be able to afford this package and the way that it goes. And it's not easy. Was it the Women's World Cup in 2017? They didn't have third umpires for runouts, right? Nope. So let alone DRS. And we've seen that with the World Cup qualifiers, right? When West Indies got that LBW against Scotland to qualify for the 2019 World Cup, when, you know, I think you'll find a few Scottish fans are like, we would have liked DRS for that particular one.
Yeah, anyway, Constance obviously performed and Prince Batra isn't enjoying that comment one bit, so you can go sulk on your own, buddy. Other people also performed. Australia's top four was a major point of contention, right? We were talking about how it was extremely shaky, but on Boxing Day, they turned up, right? Not just Sam, but also Osman Khwaja finally got a 50, 57 for him. Manas scored 72 and 70 in this test. And speaking of Hotspot, I would love to just have it for Manas's innings so I can see all the nut shots and all the body blows that he cops.
There's a lot of nut shots.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen any other batter. Maybe Joe Root comes close, who's copped that many nut shots, right? In this series alone, there could be a montage. And then Steve Smith, of course, scored 140, back-to-back tons for him. And he's looking like the Steve Smith of old as well. So, yeah, that was a surprise, wasn't it? I know it was like a batting-friendly surface at the start of this test match, but who would have thought that the top four would score that many runs?
I mean, this is where the comment, I've forgotten the other guy's name, the anger guy, but this is where, and a lot of people don't understand what impact Constance had, because people were going on about the strike rate and going, oh, everyone's just saying because he's got a good strike rate. I'm like, no, it's not about the strike rate. What he did was is he knocked India's plan off.
Yes.
And it allowed Usman Khawaja to bat properly. Usman Khawaja didn't even have to face Bumrah for ages. And by the time he did, Bumrah wasn't quite on because of what had happened. And then Manas came in with India reeling, right?
Yep.
Which meant that Smith came in with India reeling, which meant that Smith could just play like he does in first innings and pick up another 100. You know, it all follows on. I think there was a bit in the deck in that first session. I mean, Constance missed like four balls in an over at one stage. Like, Khawaja looked fine at his end, but there was certainly something more going on when Bumrah was bowling. And they managed to mitigate that and get themselves into a really good position in this game. And realistically, outside of Nathan Lyon and Scott Boland, no one else really played the second the new ball that well in this match. Like, it was tough conditions when that new ball was going around. Very different to the kind of tough conditions we saw at maybe the Gabba, which was more a traditional new ball wicket. But, like, people were just not enjoying that at all out there. And so, you know, well done to them to be able to get themselves to that section.
Is Steve Smith officially back? Is that a safe statement to make?
So we did I know you've been busy with weddings and parties and steroids and all these different things. We did a video on it where, if you look at it, he always makes runs against India. He quite often makes runs in
the first innings.
Also make first innings, makes runs in Australia. There was a couple of other things that went his way as well. And now I've forgotten what they were. But you go through it and so his big trouble of recent form has been when he's gone in early. When he's actually gone in later, he's still made runs, which doesn't make any sense, being that he opted to open the batting recently. But yeah, you start to go through all those different things and you go, it's probably wildly inaccurate to say that he's back. I still think, do you remember when Yunus Khan made runs in England?
Yeah.
In that last tour,
mm-hmm. 218.
Yeah, I've been comparing him a lot to that, where he looks like a caricature of himself in the way that Yunus Khan became a caricature, because he's trying to find his way to make it work. And I've got no issues, you know, with the fact that he's finding a way and he's a very clever player. But I need to see a lot more before I was like, he's back. But the second innings was magnificent. But you take that. It didn't look like, you know, sometimes when a bit like the Gabba knock, where sometimes you look at it going, oh, okay, well, he's made runs, but how do we feel about this? I didn't feel about the second innings in Melbourne.
Yeah, fair enough. And I mean, they've got, like, Australia have got runs out of Khwaja, Marnus and Smith in this test match. So that's a big positive for them. But the real runs, or the important ones, I would say, came from the lower order, right? Pat Cummins, player of the match, 49 runs in the first innings, 41 in the third. And then he also took 6 wickets, 3 each in each innings, right? Massive performance from him. Nathan Lyon took 5 wickets in the game and scored 41. Scotty Boland, doesn't matter how many runs he scored, he was out there. He was battling it. And he also took 6 wickets. So those three guys with bat and ball really kind of helped secure this victory for Australia.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Scotty Boland must have batted for about an hour and a half in this test match, which is remarkable, really.
Build that man a statue already. Come on.
Exactly. We saw something similar with India's first innings, right? In that they did a similar thing. I think it was easier to bat there, but you've got to give credit to those guys for pulling it out. I mean, the second one is quite weird because Cummins was trying to at least score at a rate, but then Lyon and Boland were not even scoring.
Yeah.
86 minutes.
86 minutes.
Yeah. But you look at it and he wasn't even trying to... he wasn't even trying to, you know, knock the ball. Oh, no, sorry. It was more, 86 minutes was the fourth inning, the third innings. I think he batted for 30 minutes in the first innings as well. So it's almost 2 hours altogether. I said 90 minutes. So I was wrong, but I knew what I was trying to get to. But they were still going for it. And then they just started batting on, like, on and on, which shows you how pragmatic and defensive this Australian team can be. And you're like, if India had drawn that, everyone would have said, what kind of Australian team is this? They didn't declare the night before. They, you know, didn't get into India. They didn't give themselves 2 bites of the cherry. They had 2 tail enders knocking the ball around and all this sort of stuff. And it's like, none of that mattered in the end because they got home easily. So, you know, good effort from the tail and specifically Scott Boland. He can't bat.
Yeah, I mean, those three guys, Cummins, Scotty Boland and Nathan Lyon, probably combined for, I don't know, I'm going to take a wild shot at it and say 180 runs across both innings, something like that. You know, probably close. And then they also took 17 wickets amongst each other. Mitch Stark only took 1. I don't even know if he's fit or not because he was struggling. Let's go to the SCG, I suppose. We've talked about everything and we have another podcast to do after this as well. What changes would you make to either side? I would want Shubman Gill to come back in for sure and maybe sit Mitch Marsh out. Give Bo Webster a game. I mean, it doesn't seem like that big of a or a hot take at this point.
It's my only interesting point is Bo Webster the future or is Aaron Hardy the future? Mm-hmm. And so when the series was on the line, Bo Webster made more sense. He was in great form and doing very well. I think Aaron Hardy is probably a player with a higher ceiling going ahead. And I really like Bo Webster as a player. I've got no issue with Bo Webster coming in. But they're 2-1 up, so it just depends on how they look at it, right? Who replaces? Jai Richardson was there. So if Mitchell Stark can't play, I assume Jai Richardson comes in. The man who, it felt like about 2 weeks ago, he dislocated his shoulder high-fiving someone and is now about to play a test match. So Australia have options in a couple of different directions there. India, I mean, you could do almost anything with India, right? They still have to win this match.
Yep.
So does that mean that dropping Rohit and Virat is the best option? Or because you still have to win this match, do you play your senior bowlers? Jasper Bumrah looks like he's been in the red zone for about a test and a half.
Yep.
You have to win this test match and you can still retain the trophy, right? So you have to play him, but are you like, do we really have to play him? Questions there.
It's not just retaining the trophy. If they do win and Sri Lanka defeat Australia and Sri Lanka, which could still
double,
happen.
It's the double one,
So they would want to believe that it's still, you know, possible. So it's a really tricky one for India. And I mean, like you said, they could really try anything over here, but I feel like they're going to back both those senior players. It's one last hurrah. They'll play.
Just one last final thing on the test. I just want to say too that we had a look at it for the scoreboard. It was remarkable how it went for India in that the control percentage sort of suggested that they had a bit of an unlucky day. Hmm. And two of the wickets, the Jaiswal one and the Rishabh Pant one, like the expected averages on those combined must be just mammoth. Right? Yeah. You just don't get out in Test cricket to those balls very often. Hmm. And they were... those two, obviously, you know, especially with Rishabh Pant, is now getting abuse, I'm sure, mm-hmm. online for it. But they were also the two that batted an entire session.
Yeah.
To not only get India into a chance of drawing the game, but for a little while, people were like, wait a minute, could they play for the win here? Hmm. You know, it's just worth remembering that. It was a very odd last innings because Australia just stayed in there and Australia wasn't particularly exciting or anything. They just did the basics right over and over again.
And they timed it to perfection as well because they had, what, 90-odd overs to bowl at India, you know, with a target of 340, so they could set some attacking fields as well, which might not have been possible if they had gotten bowled out the previous day.
But they didn't actually set attacking fields for a long period of time either. Like that's even when India were blocking. Yeah, it was like it took him forever to just be like, I really don't think they're going for it now. Mm. So it's like, I would wait for them to hit some boundaries before I worried about putting anyone out on the boundary on this particular day. But yeah, that you're right. That's how he thinks about things.
Anyway, still lots at stake, folks, heading into the New Year's Test at the SCG. Of course, Australia would want to win a Border Gavaskar trophy for the first time in like 10 years. And India would still believe that this is possible. They can have their third bite at the World Test Championship final cherry. And two times wasn't the charm. So maybe, you know, some twist of fate can allow them to play this one. And you never know if that happens, anything could happen. That's the beauty of cricket. And that's the beauty of Test cricket in 2024. Oh. You never say never, right? Anyway, just a quick reminder, you guys can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be a one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be videos, podcasts, or written content. That's all for this particular Overthrows podcast. Let us know what you think will happen at the SCG. That is all for now, folks. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.